Yeah, I mean, you get a familiarity with the stadium, with the process of going to the hotel and the city, and that's definitely something that eases your mind when you try to get to the Super Bowl. If you know you've been in this place before and you understand what kind of the pregame and stuff like that happens, and then to beat a good football team, that's a really good football team with a lot of talented players, and so we played well enough to win. I still think there was times offensively we could have been better in the second half and in the red zone we talked about. And then defensively, they're going to want to try to continue to get better and better each and every week. And that's the great thing about football and the NFL is you build and build and try to execute and be the best at the end of the season.
Best player in the National Football League, Patrick Mahomes, discussing the possibility of going back to Tampa. That would be a good thing because that would mean that the Chiefs would be in the Super Bowl 55 and they'd have a chance to repeat as Super Bowl champions. And here to talk about the Chiefs is Matthew Derrick. Does a wonderful job covering the Chiefs, Chiefs Digest. Check him out online. And Matthew, it's good to have you again, man. It's been a great year so far for the Chiefs. Can they keep this thing rolling?
I mean, I haven't seen any evidence of the contrary yet. I mean, they've had some struggles. I mean, it hasn't been a cakewalk for this team. But at the same time, I mean, 10-1, one loss by just 8 points. I mean, overall, I mean, this still looks like one of the best teams in the league. And when you've got quarterback like Patrick Mahomes playing at the level that he's playing at right now, it's hard to find a way that teams are going to beat them.
Call me greedy, but I would just love to see what the Chiefs could do when the offense is clicking like they were in the first half the other day for an entire game, because all year long the Chiefs have had those flashes or they've even put together halves, maybe even three quarters where the offense has looked really good, but they do seem to have that switch that maybe they dial it back a little bit or maybe they lose a little bit of focus, and then all of a sudden they seem to flip that switch again and make plays when they had to, and that seemed to happen against Tampa on Sunday. But I tell you, it's scary what this team could do if they were clicking all game long on offense.
Well, you used the key word there, which is greedy.
Yes.
What certainly Chiefs fans are. You know, I mean, does this team... I got their first seven drives, scored on five of them. Six of them were, you know, scoring potential drives because, you know, they had the turnover in the red zone on the fumble. And then they go three drives where they don't score. And you feel like it's the end of the world. But it's not. I mean, you know, hey, you know, every once in a while the Chiefs are not going to score.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen. I mean, they're going to occasionally have a three and out. I mean, you know, we're grading this team on such a ridiculous high. And you know what? They're not. It's not going to be probably a team that goes out and scores 40 points every week, even though it's an offense that's capable of it. Because you know teams are figuring out that the best way to beat the Chiefs is if you limit their possessions, it's going to give you a chance. You know what? There's going to be times that if you limit the Chiefs to eight possessions, they're going to score on seven of them, and it's going to be a rout, and you can't do anything about it. There's going to be weeks where maybe they only score on four or five, and now you've rolled the dice and you got a chance. The problem that, you know, when the Chiefs in 2018 were setting records and putting up all these ridiculous points, it was because they were getting, you know, 12, 13, 14 possessions a game. And when you do that, yeah, you're going to get some 40-point outcomes. Teams now are, like, realizing that you've got to die by 1,000 paper cuts. You've got to take away the deep ball. You've got to slow them down. Tampa Bay did not do that in the first quarter. Tampa Bay came out and tried to play their defense and say, you know what, if you beat us, you beat us. And that's exactly what the Chiefs did. I mean, they were throwing the ball downfield. They were getting Tyreek Hill in single coverage. I think they had five possessions in the first quarter. Yeah, you can't do that if you're an opposing team. And then once Tampa Bay changed their strategy, you saw that you can slow down the Chiefs and, you know, you can minimize a little bit of what they do. But you know what? They're still going to go out there and put 25, 30 points every week. And it's just going to be up to you as an opposing team to figure out if you can top that.
Here's the thing that has to be absolutely frustrating for a defensive coordinator and opposing teams. And this is what I think is so great about how the Chiefs offense has evolved. And we have seen it. Every game's a little bit different. You know, we saw against the Bills where they dared the Chiefs to run it. And they said, okay, we'll run the ball. We don't have to throw for 350 yards. That's cool. We'll run it down your throat. They won that way. They've had games where they haven't run the ball hardly at all. Don't need to. They've had games where they've stretched the field against Tampa because that's what they gave them. And then they have other games where they double Hill, they double Kelsey, nothing deep. And so, okay, we'll just go ahead and go on 8-minute drive and go 10 plays, 88 yards. And what that does is, yes, it shortens the game, but it also shortens the game for the opposing team. And you see games this year where the Chiefs' offense has had the ball 34, 35, 36, I think one game 38 minutes time of possession, which I guess that helps the opposing team in regards to the Chiefs aren't getting as many possessions as you referred to, but it also means that they don't have the ball very much to come back. I think you're right. It is a game of 1,000 paper cuts in regards to how you try to defend this football team. And when the Chiefs are smart enough to say, hey, it might be boring, but we'll take the 8-yard pass on first down and 10. Second down and 7, we'll take the 6-yard pass and have third and 1. And then we're not afraid to go for it on fourth and short. I just don't know what you do defensively. You can't shut this team down. To me, it's all about you have to take advantage of the Chiefs' defense when given the opportunity.
Well, and you hit it right there because, you know, it's been over a calendar year since the Chiefs have lost their second game. I mean, they've only lost one in the last 12 months plus, and that one game was to the Raiders where they scored 32 points, but the defense gave up 40. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's just the thing. I mean, if the Chiefs are going to score their 30 points every week, which it seems like they're close to doing, I mean, the only way that you're going to beat them is if you score 31. And that's what the Chiefs, you know, since that run began in the middle of last season and the defense, you know, really playing really well at a high level, that's what teams haven't been able to do. We've seen some of that leaking a little bit in this middle part of the season, and I think some of that is, you know, it's teams around the league catching up to a little bit about what Steve Spagnuolo has been doing defensively, figuring some things out, trying to figure out how to counter what the Chiefs do. And now, you know, it's going to be dependent on to see how the Chiefs react to that. I mean, you know, we've seen it offensively on the offensive side of the ball. Teams, you know, saw what the Chiefs were doing in 2018. They adjusted. The offense had to, you know, respond to that, and you've seen them do that to the point now where this team, as you said, can go at any speed. I mean, they can play at any level. I don't see how this offense, you know, barring significant injuries, goes out and does something like score 13 points at this point, because they can do anything and everything. They can do it all. Defensively, they're not there yet, and that's why if you're an opponent, you know, that's why your strategy has got to be limit the Chiefs' opportunities on offense as much as you can and hope that you can strike that defense.
Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest with us here today on the Sports Ticket. Do you, when you watch the Chiefs' offense, and I'm just looking at the schedule here and I'm going off my memory bank, the Charger game, the offense struggled most of the game, but when it was crunch time, they figured out a way to get it done. The Ravens, they were unstoppable. Then they kind of went into a lull. Seemed like they really did lose some focus. And I remember Eric Bieniemy getting all over the offense, and then all they did was respond with a long touchdown drive. New England, they kind of slept through that one a little bit offensively, although the Patriots always have a good defensive strategy. But when they really needed to turn it up there in the second half, they did. The Raiders, kind of the exception, and I think part of that is they, you know, the offensive line had a bad day. And the defense did too, obviously. Let's see, what was another game? Carolina, when they had to turn it up, they did. The Raiders, they had to go on that last drive. They went down and scored. And then Tampa Bay, the recent game where they were unstoppable first half except for the strip sack fumble. And then in the second half, they get the two turnovers, don't do anything with it offensively. And then there's 4 minutes, 10 seconds to go, and there's no way the Buccaneers should have been within three with 4 minutes to go. That game should have been over at 5:05 the other day, in my opinion. And that's getting greedy, I know. They won, so forth and so on. But it is a little scary when you allow teams to hang around. But Mahomes made the plays in the final 4:10. Once again, it seemed like the offense, you know, realized the situation, and we're going to finish it right here. Do you have some concerns with that? Maybe it's nitpicky, but do you believe that this offense at times is so good that maybe, I don't want to say they get bored, but there is a lack of focus at times to where they almost seem to have this knack, and some of the great teams in any sports over the years have had this, where you can kind of flip a switch when you really need it?
You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, they certainly have it. I mean, they've got the ability to flip that switch. I think, you know, part of it, I think, is certainly that, you know, Andy Reid saw in 2018 that, you know, the effects that running up and down the field can have on the other side of the football. And one of the things that he's, you know, talked about quite a bit, and especially when they brought in Steve Spagnuolo, was the need to play complementary football. And a big part of that is making sure that your offense does not put a lot of pressure on your defense. And running up and down the field, while great for the scoreboard, is not always great for your defense. I mean, and you certainly saw that in 2018.
Oh, yeah.
That defense just got run ragged. And I think you even saw it a little bit in the early part of 2019. You know, the defense played a lot of plays and were really kind of worn down in the first half of the season. And once they got healthy and once the offense, I think, started getting into a little bit of that flow of being able to control the game and dictate terms and control the football more, I mean, I think you saw that, you know, help out quite a bit. And that's kind of where they are right now. I mean, you know, the Chiefs want to play ball control offense. I mean, they want to move methodically. That's not their, even, you know, you might say that the goal is, Eric Bieniemy will tell you the goal is to score at every single play. Andy Reid's philosophy is the goal is to score on every drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, there's a distinction there. I mean, because you don't always want to run up and down the field. Sometimes you got to be methodical about it. Sometimes you got to be able to run the football. And it's as much for your defense as it is for your offense. I mean, we talk about teams wanting to limit the Chiefs to maybe 8 possessions in a game. You know what? Andy Reid's fine with that. I mean, if he's able to have 8 or 9 possessions and he's still able to control the clock and he's able to score on most of those drives, he's okay with that. But, I mean, it does help that if they do get themselves into a shootout, that they do know it's there. And you know what? I mean, we really haven't seen a point yet where the Chiefs have had to go to the tank and it not be there yet.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about that. What about this? And I know some Chiefs fans are critical. And, you know, this is the thing. Chiefs fans are spoiled now. There's no question. I mean, Mahomes, when he does something spectacular, it's just regular now. We're completely spoiled. I threw it out on social media the other day. I said, listen, we've got to enjoy this more. We can't be whining about so many little things. You got to enjoy this more. We're watching a guy that might be the best quarterback to ever play the game, and he's only 25, and the numbers are just astounding what he's doing so far. And whether or not he'll, you know, fulfill that and be the greatest quarterback of all time, you know, that's down the road for everybody else to decide, but he's certainly on pace for that. But one of the criticisms that has been thrown out there, and I understand the frustration, I get frustrated a little bit every once in a while as well, is when the Chiefs are in third and short, fourth and short, sometimes they either get too cute, although I argue that when you complain about being cute like they did there at the goal line to start the game against Tampa, you're not yelling, why did we run the trick play when it's worked most of the time this year inside the 5-yard line?
Exactly.
Okay, so I try to tell people, listen, you need to be consistent. If you don't like that play call against Tampa, then you got to be mad about the whole Mahomes in motion, the Kelce underhand throw that scored recently and all that. But what about this criticism? And that is, and I think a lot of people were really, really pleased by what Andy Reid did at the end of the game against the Bucs. And I don't know if it's Andy just go ahead and naturally evolving to this point, or it's just simply that the Bucs are really good against the run, and so he felt like we got to throw the ball to ice the game. But it was somewhat refreshing. I remember the Titans game last year. Mahomes rolled to his right. Remember, he had that knee brace on. There was only one guy to throw to, and it was Blake Bell, of all people. We've seen before with the Chiefs trying to ice the game, they run it. They're sometimes conservative. It's like, for crying out loud, give Mahomes a chance to run the option, have a rollout, have a bootleg, just whatever you do. The biggest criticism is, I don't care if it's 3rd and inches, 4th and inches, 4th and 7, 3rd and 1. Leave the ball in 15's hands. That's what Andy Reid had to do against the Raiders 2 weeks ago. He did allow that the final 4-10, and Mahomes got it done. What about that criticism in regards to Andy Reid not going and getting stuck in the old school of football? Well, it's 3rd and 1. I'm going to give it to Sherman or Williams to try to get a yard when I got number 15.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's really interesting because you go back to week one and remember, you know, against Houston, the Chiefs ran the ball a lot in that game in 3rd and short and goal line situations, and they didn't get it done. And they did that a few times early in the season, and I think a big part of that was really just trying to figure out what they had in Clyde Edwards-Helaire and seeing if they've got that ability yet to run the ball in short yardage situations and in red zone situations. Because we've seen this since Andy Reid got here. He's built an athletic offensive line that can move around. They can get downfield. They run a lot of outside zone plays that require the offensive line to get out to the edges and get downfield and block. And when you've got an athletic, speedy offensive line that can do that, sometimes what you miss is a little bit of that mauler, that ability to just, you know, manhandle guys. And if it's 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1, just run into a cloud of dust and get it done. that's where they lack. I mean, that's why you've seen over the years, Hungry Pig Wright, you know, Tebow Pop Pads, I mean, what, you know, Ferrari Wright now, whatever it may be, you know, you sometimes have to be creative. I mean, you're going to have to throw the football around in those situations. And, yeah, I mean, it was, it's interesting, especially since you bring up, like, the play last year, you know, with the throw to Blake Bell. You know, even that last play, that third down conversion that they threw to for Tyreek Hill, I mean, that was a play that had only one answer.
Yeah.
I mean, that the only option on that play was for Patrick Mahomes to get the ball to Tyreek Hill. I mean, he even tried to escape and get out of the pocket.
Yeah.
There was nowhere for him to go.
Uh-huh.
The only option on that play was for Tyreek Hill to get open,
mm-hmm.
and he did. Now, the benefit there is that this time you're calling the play for Tyreek Hill and not Blake Bell.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, the Chiefs still do sometimes limit themselves in those options, but you're right. I mean, you know, they've got it. They are at their best when they're throwing the football and they're being creative. And if that means that you've got to do it with them games on the line, if it's third down and you're trying to convert to ice a game, if you're trying to punch it in, you know, third and goal, fourth and goal from the one, I mean, you got to be you. And that's what the Chiefs are kind of doing right now.
When that play was snapped, I didn't like it. He was rolling to his left. As you said, there was only one option, and I didn't like it initially. Of course, then he throws the pass. Hill makes a great play, and it works out. But I didn't like it when they snapped it because I thought you limited his options as they did in the Titans game. So I agree with you. But there is a big difference. Number 10 was trying to catch it instead of Blake Bell. And Mahomes more mobile because he had the knee brace last year in that game. Tyreek Hill, I mean, I don't know why anybody bothers to play man-to-man. That was ridiculous what the Buccaneers tried to pull the other day, and the Chiefs were like, "Oh, thank you. We'll just go ahead and keep going there and going there and going there." And I felt sorry. I don't know if I've ever felt sorry for an opposing player ever against the Chiefs, but I felt sorry for Carlton Davis. I mean, my Lord, that poor guy on an island. But what about Hill and how important he is to this offense? Because, you know, he's missed a few games over the years, And the offense does, it's not nearly as good. And to me, it's pretty simple that he stretches the field, so that opens things up underneath, and you usually got to double cover Tyreek Hill. But just his impact on the game, whether he's catching passes or not.
It's huge. I mean, and in so many different ways. And, you know, and I think Andy Reid even mentioned it again this week. You know, some of the benefit of Hill is just what he does pre-snap and the way that he's able to move around.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about a guy having to guard him the entire game. I mean, I remember I heard it again this week. I mean, the story from a few years ago where I can't remember which one of the Broncos corners it was talking about the fact that he had to get two IVs during the game because he was trying to run around and chase Tyreek Hill all night.
Chris Harris, you know, I think it was.
Yeah, it was Chris Harris. Mm-hmm. I think it couldn't remember it was him or Tlaib, but that was Harris. You know, the energy that he has and the ability he has to move around, I mean, that's what causes so much strain on defense. You know, you run around all night trying to chase Tyreek Hill, it's going to wear you out. And, you know, and as much as Tyreek Hill, I mean, I'll also mention Sammy Watkins because mm-hmm. even in that particular play that we're talking about, and, you know, Watkins having the ability to run that rub route and hit Davis to slow him down and kind of get him caught up in the wash and get him off balance so that then Hill was able to break free on that comeback route. That's something that nobody else on this offense can do. You know, if DeMarcus Robinson was in that spot at the end of the game, bless his heart, he's not doing what Sammy Watkins does. You know, so there's another guy. I mean, there's two guys that you've got that, you know,
yeah,
complement each other so well. And I don't think it's any mistake that Tyreek Hill has a big, huge week this week when Sammy Watkins come back.
Yep.
Not that Hill couldn't do it on his own, because he's clearly one of the elite receivers in this league. But when you got a couple of guys like that that play so well together and complement each other, I mean, there's a reason why the Chiefs' offense performs at a different level when Sammy Watkins is on the field.
I'm glad you brought that up. We've talked about it on our show, is that Sammy doesn't have all these stats that'll blow you away, but they are definitely better when he's on the field, and glad that he was back another year. Yes, he gets hurt, banged up, but man, he came through in the playoffs last year. Kind of like Damian Williams, you know, didn't have a great regular season, but boy, him and Watkins, Williams and Watkins usually perform well in the postseason. Of course, Williams opting out this year. What about this offensive line for the Chiefs? You know, I know people get critical of the offensive line, and I get it, and I don't want to make excuses. They did a great job in the first half for the most part till that strip sack. Second half, they struggled a little bit more. But for crying out loud, I mean, you're missing your right guard who opted out. your left guard was going to be possibly Niang that they drafted, or, of course, they had Osimile, who was doing a great job, especially week one in run blocking. Then he got hurt. And then you got Swartz that's missed a lot of time. And then you stick in a guy that hadn't played hardly at all, Allegretti, at left guard, which there are questions about him. You move Wiley over on the right side, if I remember correctly. And then you've got Rimmers, who was a good pickup in the offseason playing right tackle. And yet this team, for the most part, doesn't really skip a beat. What about piecemealing, putting this offensive line together, considering how many guys either opted out or been hurt?
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, a big factor that kind of does get overlooked a little bit because, you know, Larry not being around the entire season, and that's a starter from a Super Bowl team, you're down. They were going to be filling the left guard position anyway, and, you know, Assembly kind of fell into their lap, and then they lost him. Schwartz is the best right tackle in the league. Rimmers has been playing well, but he's not Mitchell Schwartz. And other guys, I mean, Eric Fisher's been dealing with a knee injury the last couple of weeks. Austin Ryder, you know, really just now kind of getting back to health after having a little bit of a tweak knee injury. They've been dealing with nothing but injuries, and they're, as you mentioned, I mean, really on plan C and D of this offensive line this season, and they've been able to piecemeal it together. I mean, it hasn't always been pretty. This week, it was kind of, a lot of even the success in the first half was just based on the fact that they were getting rid of the ball quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But they've had problems in the run game at times this year because of the offensive line and the injuries and the issues. I mean, they are playing well. I mean, I think it's, you know, being probably too harsh on the offensive line to just say that, you know, it's been bad. They've been playing well considering what they've gone through. You know, I think you're hoping that, hey, if Mitch Schwartz can come back for the end of the season and for the postseason run, that's going to give them a boost. I mean, if you can do that and then have Rimmers be able to move back to guard, Allegretti's been fine, but having a veteran over there next to Fisher would certainly help out. You know, they've been having to kind of just piecemeal it together, and yet at the same time, I mean, they're still moving the football. They're not having any problems doing that. But, yeah, I mean, this offensive line has been under fire all season. And all things considered, yeah, I mean, I think they've been performing fairly admirably.
What do you believe is the biggest concern? What in your eyes, in your mind, is the biggest concern for this football team moving forward after a 10-1 start? Is it a lack of pass rush? Because that's my biggest concern.
Yeah, and I'll set the two biggest concerns aside, which is that, you know, anything happens to Patrick Mahomes,
sure,
or Travis Kelce.
Right. That's understood.
set those on another planet because you don't want either one of those to happen.
Right.
I think it is the pass rush. You know, it's interesting. I was looking at some stats the other day. You know, Chris Jones actually is ranking in the top of the league when you look at, you know, pressures, sacks, and tip passes and all those things put together. He's, you know, one of the top five, you know, defensive interior linemen in the league. But the fact that they're just not getting the sacks consistently, they're not getting the hits on the quarterback consistently as a group, that's a concern. And, you know, and some of that is that the teams have been able to adjust to what the Chiefs do defensively. So they're giving a lot of attention to Frank Clark and Chris Jones. And the Chiefs, you know, are struggling a little bit in the secondary right now, kind of trying to figure out who they are. So Tyrann Mathieu hasn't really been able to be that, you know, guy that you can line up on every single play at a different spot and not know where he is and account for him.
Mm-hmm.
When the Chiefs can't do that, then it becomes a little bit easier for an offense to say, you know what, we're going to worry about Chris Jones and Frank Clark up front, and that's it. I mean, we'll deal with Mathieu when we have to, but as long as we know all we have to do is worry about those guys and we don't have to worry about just about whether Matthew's coming on a blitz or anything else, or we don't know where if he's going to be covering somebody. You know, if you don't have that mystery that you got to solve pre-snap, it makes things a lot easier. And that's where the Chiefs have kind of been. I mean, until they're able to get pressure up front with four guys consistently and not have to rely on blitzes, you know, that's going to be a problem. I mean, and that's going to make a lot of other things go away. I mean, it will help ease the pressure on the linebackers. It'll help ease the pressure on the secondary, especially the corners have had some up and down moments this season. You know, the Chiefs are still trying to, you know, juggle things with safety, with Juan Thornhill not being at, you know, completely 100%. A lot of those things get easier to deal with if they're getting pressure up front consistently and with just bringing four guys.
Chris Jones, for me, I've been paying close attention to him the last couple of games, and I have to be honest, he didn't do anything against the Raiders. I thought he was a no-show against the Raiders. And then he's yelling on the sideline, whether it's words of encouragement or yelling at whoever, that's the time he gets on TV. And he got some pressure in the Tampa Bay game, but I saw plays, and our sports director and I were watching this, and we agreed that there were times where when he just didn't get enough pressure, it's almost like he quit rushing. He's not getting his hands up to block passes as much as he did earlier in the year in regards to when he knows he can't get to the quarterback. And then, of course, he's chirping and barking with Brady, and I was just worried he was going to get a penalty there when it was a fourth down and goal and you held him to a field goal. It seems like the last 2 weeks, the only time that we've noticed Chris Jones is when he's barking. I had a concern, and I hope I'm wrong on this, and maybe he's just having a bad couple of weeks. Maybe I'm overreacting a little bit. But I had a concern of all the guys the Chiefs gave money to, the one that I hesitated to give the money to, and it's not my money, so why should I care? It was Chris Jones. I was worried of all the guys I gave the money to, the guy that could be the most content, the guy that might get fat and happy on a contract, as people have talked about before, could be Chris Jones. I wasn't saying he would. I'm just saying I thought there was more of a chance he would be the one that might get a little bit content. Are you seeing some of the same things that we are seeing in regards to how he's played the last couple of games? Maybe he's not 100% healthy. I don't want to make excuses for the guy, but he just hasn't really done too much, it seems like, the last two games.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, like I said, I mean, until I looked at those stats, I was thinking the same thing that you were, that, you know, we're just not seeing the same impact from a Chris Jones. And, you know, and some of it is because, you know, when you invest in statistics like pressures, you know, that's such, you know, a nebulous term.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't mean that you hit the quarterback. It doesn't mean that, you know, you really affected the play that much. It just means in somebody's opinion that you got pressure on the quarterback. But it's not the same as hitting him. It's not the same as a sack. And, you know, we have not been hearing Chris Jones's name as much. I take it from the opposite direction, to be honest. Okay. You know, I didn't have any concerns about Chris Jones getting paid and that he would slack off, because I think that's been the perception of Chris Jones, because we entered this league, the knock against him was that in college that maybe he took some plays off and wasn't always 100%. And yet, in his career, we've seen a guy who's really worked to sculpt himself. I mean, from a guy who came into the league with a little bit of baby fat, mm-hmm. and maybe didn't always look like he was taking things seriously, he behind the scenes, he has. I mean, he has really worked to get himself into shape. You know, he's really a fit and trim guy. You know, he's worked really hard on his diet. I mean, he's tried to take care of himself and you know, earn that contract. And I think he did. I think the concern was that when Chris, for me, when Chris Jones gets paid, if he feels too much pressure to live up to that, uh-huh. and tries too hard. And because that, when you do that, when you try to put too much on your plate, it can lead to you getting out of position. I mean, if you're trying to do too much, it can mean that you overcommit. It means that you get out of position. Sometimes you're just not where you're supposed to be. And if you play yourself out of plays like that, then, yeah, you're going to be in trouble. So I think that's something that, you know, he's probably going to have to deal with. And maybe that's not it at all. Maybe it's just simply that teams are doing a really good job of playing him, taking him out of plays, making sure that they're, you know, moving the ball away from him and not giving him any opportunities. But that was always my bigger concern, was that, you know, Jones was just going to put too much pressure on himself mm-hmm. to live up to those numbers.
And maybe we're seeing a little bit of that when, you know, barking on the sideline 2 weeks ago, so forth and so on. I mean, he might just be personally frustrated. And you know, I look back to last year, the defense didn't get a lot of pressure. And then after that Titans game, you know, Clark started to get healthier, Jones, and all of a sudden they started getting a pass rush. So I'm hoping that repeats itself here in 2020 and into January as well. All right, the rest of the schedule coming up, you know, the Broncos on Sunday night. Broncos, it looks like we'll have some actual quarterback to play this one. 7:20 kickoff on Sunday night, 6 o'clock pregame on Z96.3 Lake. At the Dolphins, an improved team. At the Saints, which we don't know Drew Brees will play in that game or not. The Falcons at home, who just absolutely lambasted the Raiders. And then the Chargers at home, who always play close games but usually don't find a way to win those. Of the rest of the schedule, what's the most worrisome game for you? Because the Chiefs are chasing the Steelers for the number one seed. as I said earlier, number one seed doesn't really mean much in regards to home field advantage, in my opinion, because of the lack of fans. And the Chiefs are 20-4 with Mahomes starting in the NFL, so they can win on the road. We know that. I think the biggest thing, of course, is having the week off. That's the biggest reason why you want that number one seed. Handicap that for me. The rest of the schedule, what's the most worrisome game for you? And do you believe the Chiefs will get that number one seed?
Yeah, before the season, I would say absolutely without a doubt that Saints game was the one that I thought was the most likely for the Chiefs to lose here late in the season. It's a pretty favorable schedule. But now that being said, you know what? The Dolphins game probably worries me more than anything else because it's a bit of a trap game. I mean, it's a team that's playing pretty well. It's right before that trip to New Orleans. It's on the road. I mean, not that, you know, road games or anything this year, but playing in Miami in December, you know, could be a little bit maybe distracting or a little bit out of character. I think there's a lot of things to be worried about that game. The Broncos should not be any problem. The Falcons are interesting because they do seem to be playing hard for Raheem Morris. And, you know, he's trying to maybe get that job. They're all trying to impress people down there, so maybe that will work out for them. Chargers are interesting because, like you said, I mean, they do seem to have a little bit of the Chiefs number as far as being able to play them close and slow them down. And you know what? That could be the last game for Anthony Lynn. I mean, that could be team's last chance to come together for him. So you're facing some teams there at the end of the season that are going to be playing for their coach. And you never know what's going to happen in those spots. I mean, I do think that it's reasonable that the Chiefs go at least 5-1 in this stretch. Or 4-1 in the stretch wouldn't surprise me if they, you know, won all five. It's going to be difficult to get that one seed because the Pittsburgh schedule is just so soft.
Yeah.
We'll see if, you know, these schedule changes cause them any problems and everything. But it's a light schedule for the Steelers. So, and the Chiefs are going to try and catch them in a couple of different ways. I mean, they might need, you know, the Steelers to drop a game or two in order to catch them for that one seed. So, we'll see, but right now I'd say that I'd give the edge to the Steelers.
Yeah, I agree. They got the Ravens, of course, tomorrow afternoon. Ravens without Lamar Jackson. And really the toughest game they've got is at Buffalo on December the 13th, Sunday night. They do have the Colts at home. Colts are kind of a team that one week looks really good, the next week not so much. And they got the Browns, but the Steelers tend to own the Browns, so I'm not too worried about that one. But either way, I'm not scared as a Chiefs fan. Being a two seed and going on the road in the AFC title game to Pittsburgh, that doesn't freak me out. And I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you Pittsburgh's going to be in that AFC title game. I think they've got some warts to deal with as well. All right, time for an off-the-wall question for you, Matthew Derrick of Chiefs Digest. And that is, we see Patrick Mahomes in all these commercials, right? He's just everywhere. And some people maybe are sick of him. I'm not, but some people are, especially Bronco fans. And he's in State Farm commercials. He's in Head & Shoulders commercials and everything else. If Matthew Derrick was a spokesperson for a product on TV for a commercial, what product would that be for Matthew Derrick?
I guess for the products that I use the most, I guess it would have to be either Dr. Pepper or Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. But I could definitely see myself in one of those, you know, FDC, Larry, the Dr. Pepper guy. I could definitely see myself in one of those spots.
You could hold a Dr. Pepper in one hand and a Reese's in the other. That'd be perfect.
Exactly. They're great. They go great together.
Exactly. There's nothing that washes down a Reese's better than a can of Dr. Pepper. Everyone knows that. Absolutely. All right, man. How do people follow your work online, and how can they get more of Matthew Derrick's stuff?
Yeah, you can catch me on Twitter, @MattDerrick. You can go to ChiefsDigest.com, and you can find Chiefs Digest on Facebook as well.
Matt, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you again maybe around playoff time. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Take care, Wade.
Take care. That's Matthew Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com, one of the best in the business covering the Chiefs inside and out.